All right, law students, buckle up, because today we are diving deep into a case that really brings together some major concepts you're going to need to know.
Yeah, this one is a good one.
We're talking about United States v. Vasquez. And what makes this case extra interesting? Well, actually, there are two things.
Two things.
First, we're not just looking at the original trial, which, by the way, was way back in 1998.
Wow, 1998, that's a while ago.
We're also going to look at a sentencing appeal that popped up much later. In 2021.
Okay.
So we'll see how these two separate legal things actually connect.
Yeah, how they're all related.
The second thing, and this is really key for all of you studying for those big exams.
Yeah.
This case is like a crash course in Fourth Amendment stuff.
Ah, the Fourth Amendment, always important.
You know, warrantless searches, seizures, when are they okay, when are they not okay?
Right, a lot of gray area there.
And then on top of that, we'll be breaking down the limits on sentence reductions.
Okay.
Specifically under this section of the law.
Which is?
It's 18 U.S.C. Section 3582C2. Gotcha.
This was the main issue in that later appeal.
So we'll see how the Fourth Amendment stuff goes down in the original trial and then how this sentencing law plays out years later.
Exactly. So ready to jump in?
Let's do it.
All right. To set the stage, let's go back to 1998. Can you give us the basic facts of the United States v. Vasquez trial?
Right. So picture this. Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
We've got the New York Drug Enforcement Task Force, and they've got their eyes on this apartment building at 633 Grand Street.
They think something's going on there.
They believe it's a hub for cocaine trafficking.
Cocaine trafficking. Okay. Serious stuff.
And this is what really kicks off all the legal battles that come later, all those Fourth Amendment questions.
So when you say Fourth Amendment questions, what's the main constitutional issue that the court had to sort out in this case?
It boils down to this. Did the police mess up by conducting arrests and searches without a warrant?
Because, you know, the Fourth Amendment is all about protecting people from unreasonable searches and seizures. Right. You need a warrant for that stuff, usually.
Usually, right. So the court had to decide if what the officers did was legit or if they overstepped their boundaries.
Exactly. The court had to determine if the warrantless actions violated the defendant's Fourth Amendment rights.
And the court, led by Judge Kears, actually set down a very clear rule about entering someone's home. Can you refresh our memory on that?
Oh, this is a big one.
Huge.
Judge Kears and the majority basically said that entering a home without a warrant.
Bad idea.
Presumptively unreasonable. It's a big no-no unless you have a darn good reason.
Unless you have a darn good reason, right. So the burden is on the government to prove why a warrant wasn't necessary in those situations.
Precisely. But, and this is important, there are some exceptions to this rule.
Of course, there are always exceptions in law, right?
Mm.
So what are these exceptions that can sometimes allow police to enter a home without a warrant?
Well, the court highlighted two main ones in this case. The first...
Let me guess, exigent circumstances.
You got it. Exigent circumstances. Like a true crime podcast fan over here.
It pays to know the law, even for entertainment.
Right. So exigent circumstances basically mean there's some emergency, you know, a situation where the police absolutely have to act fast.
Right. No time to get a warrant.
Exactly. The second exception is when they have valid consent.
Meaning the person living there willingly says, sure, come on in, search my place.
Yep. They give this. Okay.
But as we know, the law isn't always so black and white.
So true.
So how did the court apply this whole warrant rule and these exceptions to all the different people involved in this case?
Well, let's start with Amparo Medina. She was arrested in her own home, and guess what?
No warrant.
Nope, no warrant. And the court said in her case, there were absolutely no exigent circumstances, nothing that would justify skipping the warrant process.
So that's a strike one against the government.
Yeah.
But it gets even more complicated, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because she supposedly gave consent to a search after they entered her home.
Right.
But the court wasn't buying it, were they?
Nope, not one bit. They said that because the initial entry was illegal, any consent she gave afterwards was likely tainted.
Tainted? You mean like?
You know, like bad milk.
Okay.
You can't just pour bad milk into good milk and expect everything to be fine.
Right, it's all contaminated.
Exactly.
So is there a legal term for this bad milk situation?
It's called the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine.
Mm.
It's a pretty common concept in criminal procedure. And it basically says that if the cops get evidence illegally, well, they can't use it against you in court.
Because the evidence itself is tainted by that initial illegal action.
Exactly. And in Amparo Medina's case, the court said that her consent, her saying, go ahead and search, might have just been her giving in because the police were already there illegally.
Right. It wasn't truly voluntary because of that bad milk situation.
Right. And because of this, her conviction was thrown out.
Tossed.
Gone. And the court also said anything she said to the police after they arrested her, that's out too.
Wow. So the consequences of messing up that Fourth Amendment stuff can be pretty huge for the government.
Oh, absolutely. The court is serious about protecting our right to privacy in our homes. They want to make sure law enforcement follows the rules.
Now, what about Fernando Medina? His case had a different result, didn't it?
It did, yeah. In his case, the court said that the search of his car was okay.
How come?
Well, the key difference is that the court believed he gave genuine voluntary consent.
Ah, so he really did say, sure, go ahead, look through my car.
Exactly. And because his consent wasn't forced or tainted by any prior illegal actions, the search was considered legal.
Okay, so that highlights how important it is that consent is totally free and voluntary.
Huge difference between Amparo's situation and Fernando's.
Now let's talk about Vasquez himself. How did the court justify entering his apartment without a warrant?
Well, they said the police had a good reason in his case. They said there were exigent circumstances.
Those emergency circumstances we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. They believed, based on what they already knew about the supposed drug operation, that there was evidence inside Vasquez's apartment.
And if they waited for a warrant?
That evidence might disappear. Poof, gone.
So they had to act fast to preserve potential evidence.
Right. They believed it was a now or never situation, so the court gave them a pass on the warrant.
Okay, so even though there's that general rule against entering a home without a warrant, the facts of each case matter a lot.
Totally. The specific situation, the urgency, all of that plays a role.
Now, this brings us back to that really important point about consent after an illegal entry. The court was super specific about what makes consent really voluntary in those situations, right?
They were, and for good reason. They emphasized that for consent to be legit after the cops have already messed up, it can't be because the person felt pressured or intimidated. It's got to be a genuine choice.
It can't be them just saying, okay, fine,
yeah,
because they feel like they have no other option.
Right. And so the court talked about this idea of taint, you know, like that bad milk we were talking about. Uh-huh. So even if someone says yes to a search after an illegal entry, that yes might still be tainted, you know, influenced by that first bad action.
Meaning it might not be truly voluntary.
Exactly. And to untaint it, to make it truly voluntary, there has to be something that breaks the chain of events.
Like a magic spell or something.
Not quite magic, but yeah, something that separates the illegal entry from the consent. Something to show that the consent wasn't just a direct result of that initial illegal action.
So something that shows the person wasn't just going along with it because they felt they had to.
Right. That they genuinely chose to consent. And in the Medina's case, the court sent it back to the lower court to really look into whether their consent met this high standard.
So it sounds like if the police mess up that initial entry, it's going to be really tough to prove any later consent was legit.
It's a tough uphill battle.
Now, before we move on from the 1998 trial, there were a few other people whose stops and searches were challenged, weren't there?
There were, yeah. We had the Mesas and Mr. Sanchez.
And how did the Fourth Amendment apply to their situations?
Well, the Mesas were stopped in their car, and the court said that was fine because the police had what's called reasonable suspicion.
Reasonable suspicion meaning?
They had a good reason to believe, based on what they'd seen, that the Mesas might be up to something illegal.
Not quite enough evidence for probable cause to arrest them, but enough to stop them.
Exactly. In their case, the police noticed they were driving erratically after leaving that building under surveillance.
Ah, so that made the officers suspicious.
Right. And then when they pulled them over, one of the Mesas started making some, well, let's call them suspicious movements.
Like they were hiding something.
Exactly. And that gave the police probable cause.
And with probable cause, they can then do a search.
Right. And then there was Sanchez.
Right. What about him?
They stopped him because they had a hunch he had just picked up drugs from that apartment building.
Just a hunch. Is that enough?
It can be if it's based on something concrete, and this is where reasonable suspicion comes in again. It's a lower standard of proof than probable cause.
But still, the police need at least some solid reason to suspect someone.
Absolutely. And with Sanchez, his behavior didn't help. He got super nervous when the officers approached him.
Not a good look if you're trying to avoid suspicion.
And then Here's the clincher.
What did he do?
He ditched a bag he was carrying.
Oh, that's never a good sign.
Nope. And guess what was in the bag?
Cocaine.
Bingo. So dropping that bag, that gave the police probable cause to arrest him and search the bag he abandoned.
So his actions kind of sealed his fate there.
You could say that.
And those examples show how the Fourth Amendment applies not just to homes, but also to cars and even just people walking on the street.
Absolutely. It's all about balancing law enforcement's need to investigate with our right to privacy.
Okay, so that was a whirlwind tour of the Fourth Amendment issues at play in the 1998 Vasquez trial. But our story doesn't end there, does it?
Nope, not even close. We're just getting to the good stuff.
Fast forward more than 20 years, and Vasquez is back in court. What brings him back this time?
This time, it's all about sentencing. Vasquez is trying to get a lighter sentence under a specific law, 18 U.S.C. section 3582C2.
Ah, the sentencing code. Always a fun one.
Well, this particular section deals with what happens when the sentencing guidelines change after someone's already been sentenced.
Okay, so how do those changes affect someone like Vasquez, who's already serving time?
Well, if the Sentencing Commission makes changes to the guidelines that would result in a shorter sentence for someone, they can ask a court to reduce their sentence.
Ah, so they can potentially benefit from those changes, even though they happened after their original sentencing.
Exactly. And in Vasquez's case, there was a change to the guidelines, Amendment 782, which applied to his drug offenses.
And did it work out in his favor?
It did. The district court actually agreed to reduce his sentence by 68 months.
Wow, 68 months. That's a significant chunk of time. So case closed, right?
Well, not so fast. Even though he got a reduction, Vasquez wasn't satisfied.
Why not? What was he still unhappy about?
He tried to use this appeal as an opportunity to bring up other issues with his original 1998 sentence.
What kind of issues?
Stuff that had nothing to do with the change in the sentencing guidelines.
Ah, so he was trying to get a do-over on other parts of his sentencing that he didn't like?
Pretty much. He argued that the district court treated the sentencing guidelines as mandatory back in 1998. This was before the Supreme Court's decision in Booker, which made the guidelines advisory.
Right. Booker was a game changer.
Huge. And he also challenged the consecutive sentences he got for firearm offenses based on the Dean v. United States decision.
So he was trying to use these later legal decisions to his advantage.
Exactly. He thought this appeal gave him a chance to relitigate all these old issues.
But I'm guessing the appeals court wasn't too happy about that.
Not at all. The Second Circuit was basically like, nope, not going
to
happen.
Okay, so why did the appeals court shut down his attempt to bring up all these old sentencing issues?
Well, they emphasize that motions under Section 3582C2, those sentence reduction requests, are very narrow in scope.
Meaning?
They're only meant to deal with changes in the sentencing guidelines, nothing else.
So if the guidelines change in a way that could benefit someone, they can file a motion and potentially get a sentence reduction. But they can't just use that as an excuse to reopen their entire case and complain about everything they didn't like about their original sentencing.
Exactly. It's not a free-for-all. The Second Circuit even said that these 3582C2 motions are not a plenary resentencing.
And for those of us who haven't spent years memorizing legal jargon, what does plenary resentencing mean?
It basically means a complete do-over of the sentencing.
Like they're starting from scratch.
Exactly. And the court was saying that's not what Section 3582C2 is for.
It's not a second chance to bring up every little complaint.
Right. The purpose is very limited. To see if a change in the guidelines means someone should get a shorter sentence.
So why is this distinction so important? Why was the appeals court so strict about keeping the focus on the guidelines change and not letting Vasquez relitigate all these old issues?
Well, think about it this way. Our legal system values finality.
Meaning?
Meaning, once a decision has been made, especially after appeals and all that, it should generally be the end of the story.
People can't just keep challenging things forever.
Right. Otherwise, we'd be stuck in endless court battles.
So Section 3582C2 is like a very specific exception to this finality rule.
It's a narrow window that opens when the sentencing guidelines change and might allow for a more lenient sentence. But it's not a way to undo everything that happened at the original sentencing.
Okay, so the big takeaway about sentencing in this case is that you can't just bring up any old gripe you have about your original sentence during a 3582C2 motion.
Right. The appeal has to be directly related to that specific change in the guidelines.
It's about fairness and efficiency in the legal system.
Totally. You can't just keep relitigating old issues whenever you feel like it.
So looking back at everything we've discussed, both the Fourth Amendment stuff and the sentencing appeal, What are the key points that law students should really take away from United States v. Vasquez?
Well, on the Fourth Amendment side, it's a powerful reminder that entering someone's home without a warrant is a huge deal.
Not something the courts take lightly.
Not at all. The only way it's okay is if there are truly exigent circumstances, you know, a real emergency.
Or if the person gives real voluntary consent.
Exactly. And remember, that consent can't be influenced by the police doing something illegal first.
Right. It can't be tainted.
No bad milk allowed.
And on the sentencing side, the case makes it crystal clear that motions under Section 3582C2 have a very specific purpose.
It's not a chance to complain about everything you didn't like about your original sentence.
It's strictly about whether a change in the sentencing guidelines means you should get a shorter sentence.
Right. It's not open season on every sentencing issue under the sun.
Okay, so law students, pay close attention when you're studying these topics. The Fourth Amendment and sentencing are both huge areas of law.
And this case really hits on some key concepts.
Absolutely. So to sum it all up, what are some of the things you really want our listeners to remember from United States v. Vasquez?
Well, first, the Fourth Amendment part. The standard is per se unreasonable for entering a home without a warrant. That's important. And then there's that big difference between a 3582C2 motion and a complete resentencing.
Totally different beast.
And don't forget all the legal tests we talked about.
Right, like how to determine if there were exigent circumstances.
Exactly. And whether consent was truly voluntary, especially when there's that issue of taint.
And then there's reasonable suspicion, the standard for those investigatory stops.
Right. All important concepts for the bar exam and for practice.
Definitely.
And speaking of important cases, Booker and Dean.
Huge for sentencing, but
not so much in these 3582 proceedings. It's important to know the context.
Because 3582 is really just about that specific change in the guidelines.
Exactly. And I think the Vasquez case really highlights something crucial about our legal system.
What's that?
That procedural rules matter just as much as the actual laws themselves.
It's not just about knowing your rights. It's also about knowing how to use the system to protect those rights.
Exactly. Vasquez is a prime example of how these two sides of the law, the procedure and the substance, are constantly interacting.
And understanding both is key to being a successful lawyer.
No doubt about it.
And on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dive into United States v. Vasquez.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you all next time for another exciting legal adventure.
Always an adventure.
So long, everyone.
See ya.